We're holding on Dalet Amud Bey's last line. Moses Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa. Dini Mamnas B'Shloisha. Dini Mamnas have to be judged by a Beis Din of three, as we've been discussing the whole time. We learned yesterday, according to Rebbe, it needs five, but according to everybody else, and this is the halacha, it's three. But here's the twist. V'imahoya mumcha l'rabim, if one individual dayan is a mumcha of the rabbim, which we'll explain in a second what that means, dana filu yichidi, then he would be able to judge even, then he would be able to judge even by himself. Now, what do we mean by a mumcha l'rabim? There's quite a bit of discussion. So first of all, Rashi says, we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, we learned that we had Rabbi Bohu saying that min haTorah you always need three, and then we had Rava explaining the Mishnah a little bit different than Rabbi Bohu, and then we had Rabbi Acha Breid Rav Ika saying that midaraisa one would be kosher to judge because it says betzedek tishpeit amisecha. The pasuk says you in the singular should judge your fellow yid favorably. So in other words, so we see from that pasuk that one is enough. So now Rashi says that evidently our braisa over here would be following that as well and saying that it is good enough for one. So that would come out on the face of it, not like Rabbah Bohu. And it would mean also, Rashi says, we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, we have the whole discussion about Iruv Parshiyus, when the Torah says in connection with a Shomer, that when there's a when the Shomer claims the thing was stolen and the mafkid takes him to Beis Din, etc., and we learn from that that you need three. This Braisa would hold that section is talking only about a Shomer and not about cases of a Loiva and Malva, which is what we called before Iruv Parshiyus, whether we would say that there's a mixed in pasuk over here from a different context of Halvois. We would say according to this Braisa, not so, and therefore that. And therefore that one dayan is in fact good enough in such cases. Tosfos points out then the fact is Rabbi Bohu can't contradict the Braisa. So how is he going to understand that? And there's a couple of other questions Tosfos asks on it. Anyway, Tosfos ends up saying that no, we're not talking on a Doraisa level. Even if we were to say on a Doraisa level that you need three, nevertheless, we would say that midrabbanan, we would allow a Yochid Mumcha to judge. So our Braisa is not talking about so never mind what the Psukim say. The Chachamim have the ability to say that that midrabbanan we're going to allow a yochid mumcha to judge in certain cases. What do we mean by a mumcha? Generally the word mumcha in Gemara terminology usually means that he has smicha, that he has the smicha ish mipi ish. But over here, the Gemara is going to give examples. Involved. The first example over here is going to be Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman did not have that kind of smicha, which is why he's called Rav Nachman and not Rabbi Nachman. The general rule being that if a person has smicha, then he's called Rabbi, and if not, then he's called Rav. So according to that, then it would come out then that when we say over here mumcha l'rabim, we just mean exactly that: somebody who is known to who's known to be an expert. Somebody who's known to be an expert, not necessarily that he has smicha. Now, the continuation of the Gemara is going to talk about the matter of smicha and the matter of permission from the Reish Galusa or the Nasi. So, in fact, the Maharshal and the Maharam and Maharshah all talk about various angles on this of, are we switching gears? Are we changing gears in the middle over here and saying that at least according to Tosfos, that we're saying first we're talking about Stam, an expert, somebody who was known by the public to be an expert. With Tosfos themselves, actually, so Tosfos, the second Tosfos on the page, Mumcha l'Rabim, actually mentions that point. It's called Gmirno Svira. I've thoroughly learned the halachas and I'm able to also come up with svaris. But then later on, we may have that the word Mumcha is actually going to mean somebody who has smicha. So they discuss at some length various possibilities with that, including maybe how therefore that could answer the Tosfos' questions on Rashi, etc. Anyway, so Omer of Nachman, so Rav Nachman says, for example, I would be able to judge dinim mominus even by myself. Now, one point is Tosfos makes the point that would mean, in other words, if the baladin, except somebody as the dayan, and then okay, you know, they can have whoever they want. We're going to learn later on in the Masechta, for example, they can agree between themselves that three cowboys will be their dayanim or something. So when we say over here that he can be don afilu yichidi, means that he can require people to follow his psak din. So a regular based din of three can require people to follow their psak din, whether they like it or not, as long as they're a duly constituted based din. Rabbi Nachman is saying, I would have that power as a yichidi as well. We don't mean, by the way, Tosfos also further points out that, you know, we have in Pirkei Avos, al ti don yichidi, you shouldn't be judging alone, she'in don yichidi ala echad, only the one, Hashem, is really able to judge by himself. But that's more, that's in the nature of Eitzah Tova. It's good advice that Pirkei Avos is saying not to judge by yourself and to realize that only Hashem really has that ability. But as a matter of strict halacha, you would be able to do that. Also, Tosfos says a couple of other points as well. So one point is, because after all, as the Gemara is now going to continue talking about in the next couple of lines, if the dayan makes a mistake, sometimes he has to reimburse the person whom he wrongly took away money from. So therefore, it's an Eitzah Tova. Don't just do it yourself, because if it did end up making a mistake, then the whole burden, the whole payment is going to be on you to pay, as opposed to you have a base din of three, then at least it gets split up among the three of you. Or another possibility, Tosfos says, is Reb Nachman was so expert that he wasn't concerned that he might make a mistake like that. Anyway, so Reb Nachman says that. Don dinim mamonis biyichidi. Rabbi Chiya says the same kind of thing, that I'm also an expert and I would be able to judge dinim mamonis by myself. Now, again, not doesn't necessarily mean that they did, but just that they have the capability of. So the Gemara continues, Iboilahu. So now the question is, what does he mean by the word mumcha over here? What do Rabbi Nachman and Rabbi Chiya mean kegoin ano when he says like me? Does it mean someone like me who, as we just said, it means that I've thoroughly learned the relevant halachas and I know how to apply the svaris? Vina kitna reshusa, and in addition, I also have reshus. I have official authorization from the Reish Galusa, who was the governor of the Jews in Bavel, that I'm able to judge by myself. But we would say that if he's lacking that last part, if he has the gemuna v'sevuna, but he hasn't gotten the authorization, dine loy dina, then maybe we would say his judgments by himself are not a valid din, and meaning that if it turns out that he made a mistake, we would completely revoke the judgment and start all over again. Or maybe not. Afagavdala, nokit reshusa, dina dina. Maybe even without that reshus, maybe nevertheless his din would still be a din on the grounds of gomer v'savir. So again, according to Tosfos, according to the way a number of the Achronim learned Tosfos, the Gemara is maybe switching now to a different type of mumcha. Maybe before we were talking about a mumcha, just somebody who's known to be an expert, and now we're talking about a mumcha who has smicha. Who has the smicha ish mipi ish. So in that case, then his authority doesn't necessarily depend on that of the Reish Galusa. So the Gemara says, Toshma, the Marzutra Bredir of Nachman, don dinavatar. It happened that Marzutra, the son of Rab Nachman, one time judged a din Torah by himself, the tar, and he made a mistake. It turned out that what he had paskin was incorrect. Also, the Kamed Rab Yosef, so he comes to Rab Yosef to ask what he should do. Omalei, and Rabbi Yosef tells him, im kiblucha alayhu, if the Bala Din to begin with accepted you as their dayan, therefore loy teshalem, then you're not obligated to pay because they accepted you, and therefore that means they were willing to say that we're going to follow whatever you paskin, whether it turns out to be right, whether it's right or wrong. So it would mean, in other words, that so you wouldn't have to reimburse. There is machlokas rishonim within that, whether that would mean, do we revoke the judgment entirely? The Rif and the Rambam paskin that in a case where the dayan doesn't have to pay, then the whole din is revoked, because then we say, look, it was a mistake after all, and we're going to talk about later in the Masechta what kinds, there are different kinds of mistakes. There's mistakes where he didn't know a particular Mishnah or Braisa, a fact in Halacha. There's mistakes where he didn't know a certain Svara, where he didn't know a certain logical a certain logical position that might have changed his psak. We'll deal with that in more detail later in the Masechta. Anyway, the Rif and the Rambam learn that in a case where, like this, where we're saying, where Rabbi Yosef is saying there might be a case we don't have to pay, it would mean we would have to rejudge the case, though, because after all, we don't want the person to lose out unnecessarily. As opposed to, according to the Yad Ramah, we would say that no, it means he doesn't have to pay, and the din remains as it was paskin. Anyway, so he tells him, if they accepted that on themselves, then fine, you don't have to pay. The Eloi, and if they didn't accept them, they just asked you to judge them a din Torah, but they didn't say that we're willing to go along and say, so they said, judge us a din Torah, but they didn't say, and we're willing to accept your psak, whether right or wrong. So then Rabbi Yosef tells him, zil shalim, then you're going to have to go and pay. So because then it's in effect you consider a mazik, because so shmami no kilo noket reshusa. So we see from that that if he didn't get that authorization from the Reish Galusa, dine dina, nevertheless the din is still a valid din, because and here we're talking about that he didn't have reshus. So therefore, that shows that without reshus, then it shows that even without reshus, he's able to judge by himself. So Shmami, the Gemara says, okay, yes, you can prove from that that reshus is not actually necessary. He is able, as long as he's a mumcha l'rabim, as long as he's gmirna v'savirna, as long as he's learned as long as he knows how to learn and knows the svaris and everything, then he's able to judge. In this particular case, it turned out that he made a mistake, but nevertheless, it would still be a valid din. Tosfos actually learns the imloi kiblucha alayhu a little differently. Rashi is saying that either way, it means they accepted him to judge. We're just saying in the one case they said, we'll accept whatever you say. And in the other case, they didn't say that. Tosfos learns that the case where Rabbi Yosef is telling him that imloi, that eloi would mean where they didn't actually accept you at all, where you basically forced them to come to a din Torah and you were by yourself. And Rabbi Yosef would be telling him then that since you ended up making a mistake in the din, then it wouldn't be a valid din. So we see, therefore, as long as they accept him, it doesn't matter whether he has authorization from the Reish Galusa or not. Okay. So the Gemara continues in this vein. Omar Rav, Haiman de Boilam Meidan Dina. If a person wants to judge a din Torah, v'yitol mi boilam miftira, and he wants that if he makes a mistake, he should be potter from paying, lishko reshusa mebe Reish Galusa, then he should do just that. He should get official authorization to judge from the household of the Reish Galusa. The Reish Galusa being the governor of the Jews in Bavel, he has the ability, basically, Rashi explains, he has the power to be mafkir moment. We say hefker based in hefker. So the Reish Galusa has that official power to be able to be mafkir people's moment, and in that sense, therefore, he can say that you're able to judge as a dayan by yourself, and that also includes this judicial immunity that if he doesn't that if he makes a mistake, he wouldn't have to pay. So the Gemara says now. Let's talk about in the times of the Gemara. You had there was the Reish Galusa in Bavel, and then you had his counterpart in Eretz Yisrael, the Nasi. So let's talk about their respective strengths in this area. So pshita mehocha lahocha mehasam lahasam. Now it's obvious that if a person has gotten reshus from the Reish Galusa in Bavel, mehocha from here, lahocha to someplace else here in Bavel, then yes, that works. Umehosam lahosam. And similarly, if he got reshus from the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, in order to judge in Eretz Yisrael mahani, then surely that would work, because the Reish Galusa's jurisdiction extends over the whole Bavel and the Nasi's over the whole Eretz Yisrael. Umehocha lahosam nami mahani. Furthermore, we can say that if a person got reshus from the Reish Galusa in Bavel, then it would work even in Eretz Yisrael. And the reason is, d'hocha shevet v'hosam l'choikik, because we have to look at the respective strengths, at the respective authorities of the Reish Galusa and the Nasi in Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, hocha shevet. The ones here in Bavel are called shevet, are called a stick, in the sense that Reish Galusa had political power. So therefore, they have the ability, as we just said, to declare people's money hefker, hefker based in hefker. They have that power. So in fact, the Ran says they actually are in a certain sense they're in place of a king. You had kings from Malchus Beis David in the times of the first Beis Mikdash. This is long after that, but nevertheless, the Rosh HaGalusa are still descended Ben Achaben from David, and they still have that authority. They still have that ability to be able to rule over the people with force if necessary. And therefore, their jurisdiction would extend even to the Jews of Eretz Yisrael, even though they're under a different government at that time. At that time, Bavel was ruled over by the Persians, and Eretz Yisrael was ruled over by the Romans. But nevertheless, his authority still extends over Eretz Yisrael as well. So he, what we say is here, the ones in Bavel are called Shevet. They're called a staff, a stick, where they have the ability to use, so to speak, a stick to beat the Jewish people. V'hosam, whereas the ones in Eretz Yisrael are mechoikik. They're the ones who are called in the pasuk mechoikik, which means the lawgiver. They're the ones who are, the Nasi is the head of the Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael. He has great powers, but his powers are only that of a mechoikik, of a lawgiver. So as we find the psukim, Kedetanya, as we find in a braisa that describes when Yaakov says in his bracha to Shevet Yehuda, Lo Yosu Shevet Mi Yehuda, the Shevet will not cease from among the tribe of Yehuda. And that means even after there's no kingship of the Jewish people, there's still going to be this Shevet. That means Elu Roshi Golias Shem Bavel. That refers to the Roshi Golusa in Bavel, Shoroidin Yisrael Bashevet, where they are able to exercise their authority over the Jewish people with a stick. So in other words, Rashi explains they have authority that was given to them by the kings of Persia that gives them the authority to rule over the Jewish people. So Yaakov is saying in his bracha far in advance that this is how it's going to be. There's going to be at times in Jewish history when there's going to be kings from Malchus Beis David, but even after there aren't such kings, nevertheless there are still Rosh HaGalusa who have that political authority given to them by the king of Persia. And then when the pasuk continues, mechoikik mibein raglav, when Yaakov continues and says there will continue to be a mechoikik from between Yehuda's feet, that means elu bnei bonav shel Hillel. That refers to the descendants of Hillel, the Nasiim in Eretz Yisrael, shemalamdin Torah barabim, who teach Torah in public. So they're called mechoikik, the lawgiver. But the point is, the shevet, the ones who have actual political power granted to them by the kings of Persia, are in a stronger position. Tosfos actually points out that we learned in Baba Basra recently, Avira de Eretz Yisrael Machkim, that the heir of Eretz Yisrael makes you wise, and there are certain areas in Halacha where, in fact, we say that the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael have greater authority. So Tosfos says that's the thing. When you come to Isser Veheter, because Avira de Eretz Yisrael Machkim, because the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael have greater Chachma, therefore their Piskei Dinim are more relevant for the Jews above all. But here we're talking about not so much in terms of a Psak Din. Here we're talking about authorization to judge. And we're saying that the Rosh HaGalusa have the greater power in that because they're the ones who have the political power. An interesting thing in Jewish history that came up in this regard as a result of this discussion over here was in France at one point in the 1300s there was an argument between two great Talmid Chachamim in France. One of them was appointed by a certain Rav to be the head dayan of all of France. And meanwhile, the government, the king of France, appointed a different dayan in place of his father. So the question was, which one is the one who's entitled to be the Rav, the one who was appointed by the great Talmid Chacham, or the one who's succeeding his father and was appointed by the king? So the Rivosh lived at that time, and he gave a psak din about that, and he says, we see from this Rashi over here that to a certain extent the government's authority is the one who is the one that wins out. So and the Shach also agrees with that later on in the Gemara. So not everybody agrees with that. Of course, there are achronim that disagree that disagree with that and understand the Gemara and understand Rashi differently. But in any case, what actually happened was with that machlokas over who was going to be the chief rabbi of France over there. What ended up happening was a few years later, the government decided to throw all the Jews out of the country anyhow. So the thing kind of became a moot point. Neither of them is going to be the Rav of France because there's no more Jewish community in France anyway. This was in the late 1300s.
You wouldn't say that's different if the Rosh Galusa who are Yidden, where this the king of Goy doesn't understand.
No, because the point that Rashi is making is the Rosh Galusa himself gets his authority from the king of Persia. So the Rivash points out, therefore, yeah. So by the same token over here, then we're saying that here the one Dayan is being appointed by the king. So that's the point. In other words, the fact that the government is the one backing the authority, and the Rivash said, we see from that, the one who has the government backing overrules the one who doesn't. Later on, a little later in the Perek, actually, we're going to talk about the point. The Gemara is going to have, we're going to have a whole piece of Agadta about appointing Dayonim for money and whatever, and that the Marsha has a very blistering criticism over there of Rabbonim in his times in Poland, who were paying the government in order to get positions as Rabbonim. The Alter Rebbe actually mentions such a thing as well 200 years later in his deposition when he was arrested, and you had all the Malshinus of Avigdor and all that. The Alter Rebbe mentioned that point as well, that in the Polish kingdom there were many Rabbonim who bought their positions. Avigdor himself had done that, actually. Marshak criticizes that severely later on in a couple of blots on Daf Zayin, but here in the case in France of there, but Pashtus, we're not talking about either of them, as neither one is offering the government money. Just the government figure that they will do the right thing for our Jews and have this guy succeed as father. But the question was whether that was the right thing.
Okay, but at least that's nothing new, because all this happened in the second base ministry already. So it started already then.
You know, there was that.
Kind of God, yeah.
This is true. Yeah. All right, onward. Fine. Okay, so anyway, so the point is, in other words, that we see, therefore, that the power of the Rosh HaGalusa is greater, the political power of the Rosh HaGalusa is greater than that of the Nesi'im in Eretz Yisrael. So even though, yes, as Tosfos says, when it comes to matters of how to understand the Torah, we can say that the Nesi'im are greater, but when it comes to political power, which is what's needed for a Dayan, after all, when you think about it, you know, what a Dayan accomplishes has to be backed by some kind of threat of force in order for it to be effective. Unfortunately, nowadays, we have many bata dinim that don't have any enforcement mechanism, and therefore it becomes very difficult for, a based in will give out a psak, whether that Pliny owes Pliny money, or Pliny has to give a get to his wife, or all kinds of cases like that, and they have no enforcement mechanism, and the result is that what happens is, with it, not a whole lot. So this point that the Reish Galusa has that greater political power means, therefore, that if he appoints somebody and says you are able to judge Dinei Mominus, then we're saying that would have an effect even in Eretz Yisrael. The question is, Mehosam Lahochamai, what about the other way around? If the Nasi says to somebody that he has the right to judge Dinei Mominus as a Yechidi, would he be able to do that even here, meaning in Bavel? So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring a proof. The Rabba Bar Chona don dina v'tah. Rabba Bar Chona. Now, this is not Rabba Bar Chona. Tosfos points out, Rabba Bar, the Gemara is going to give soon the family tree of Rebbe and of Rav and Rav Chia and that whole family. The Gemara is Rabba Bar Chona was the next generation. He's so called because he was the son of Chona. Tosfos says maybe it could conceivably mean that his father's name was Bar Chona, but Tosfos says that doesn't really work out with other Gemaras. So what it would mean is, in other words, so you have Rabba Bar Chona. His father was Chona, who we're going to mention soon, was an uncle of Rav, and a brother of Rav Chia. And then you have Rabba Bar Chona, who was the next generation, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, and he's so called because, in other words, he came from such a distinguished family, so instead of just calling him by his father's name, as they usually do, they called him by his grandfather's name because his grandfather was very well known, being from that famous family of Rav and Rav Chia, being a brother of Rav Chia. But here we're talking Rabba Bar Chona, which is the previous generation, as the Gemara is going to say soon, he was a cousin of Rav. Don Dina, he judged a Din Torah v'tah, and he made a mistake. Also, so he came to Rav Chia, who was his uncle, to ask what to do. Omalei, and Rav Chiya tells him, similar to what we said earlier on the Amud, Iki blucha alayhu loy tashalem, if they accepted them, if the Baladin accepted you on themselves to judge them, then mean, and in other words, they're willing to, they said that they're willing, we're willing to accept this, your psak, whether it turns out to be right or wrong, loy tashalem, then you don't have to pay, the Eloi, and if not, zil shalem, then you're going to have to go and pay. Now the point is, now didn't Rabbi Bar Chana have permission from the Nasi to judge Dine, to judge Dine Mominus, as the Gemara is going to say soon? Evidently, that shows that the Rishus that he gets from the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael is not effective here in Bavel. So no, he would actually, so therefore, so the point was, Rabbi Bar Chana had judged that case in Bavel, and therefore we're saying that he would actually have to pay, because even though, because we would say, even though he had Rishus from the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, that Rishus does not extend to Bavel. So the Gemara says, Shemami, no, that proves it. Well, the Gemara asks, why? Veloy Mahani, you're telling me that such a thing is not effective? V'harabba bar Rav Huna, don't we find where in a later generation when Rabba bar Rav Huna, ki have a minsi bahadi divei Reish Galusa, when he was arguing with members of the household of the Reish Galusa, so you would have they're arguing basically that they have that their authority should outrank his, should trump his, and Omalahu Omar, and he would tell them lav mi naichu nakitnu reshusa. He would tell them, you know what, really my authority doesn't depend on yours. If you, yes, you guys have authority because of your political power here in Bavel, but Rabbi Bar Rav Huna tells them, you should know something. My power as a Dayan actually doesn't depend on yours. Mine actually comes from an independent source. He says, Nakitna Rishusa me Abba Mori. I have Rishus from my father, my Rebbe, which is Rav Huna, but Abba Mori me Rav, and in turn, my father got that Rishus from Rav. Because in other words, Rav had that permission, Rav had that reshus, and he in turn can transfer that reshus to somebody else. The same way as later in the Tosfos points out, the same way as later in the Perek, we're going to talk about smicha. A person has smicha, ish mi piyish, then he can decide to whom to grant that smicha. The same way over here, it's not smicha we're talking about, it's nitilas reshus, but it's the same idea. Rav has that ability to transfer that to his Talmud, Rav Huna, and Rav Huna in turn to his son, Rabba bar Rav Huna. So Rav in turn got that Rishus from Rav Chiya, who in turn got it from Rebbe. So in other words, so Rav Bar Rav Huna is telling the Rosh Galusa, don't think that you can lord it over me, and you can say what you say is the final word on the subject, because I have an independent source of authority. So we see on the face of it that he's saying that the authority of the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, Rebbe in his times, does extend all the way to Bavel. So the answer is no. No, he's just using words to fob them off. He's saying that we often find in the Gemara that members of the Rosh Galusa, that sometimes even the Rosh Galusa themselves, but certainly members of their family, weren't always the best guys. So therefore, so Rabbi Bar Rav Huna is just using an excuse basically to say, you don't think that you can lord it over me and make me decide the halacha differently than it's supposed to be. But in fact, the truth is that it doesn't work in Bavel. So it doesn't work in Bavel, and therefore, in truth, he would be subject to them. Except that he's telling them that, listen, you know, if you guys are going to judge not according to the Torah, then I don't have to listen to you. Actually, the Maharik gives an explanation that it means he did actually receive Rishus from the Reish Galusa. But he tells them, but the fact is, he's telling them, don't think that my authority only comes from you. Fine, yes, you gave me official Rishus, but in addition, you should know I have an independent Rishus as well that goes back to the Nesiim in Eretz Yisrael. All right, so the Gemara asks, V'chi ma'achad le mahani, Rabba bar chon reshusa de nokat lamali. Look, if the authorization from the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, if we're saying it doesn't have any validity in Bavel anyhow, then why did Rabba bar Chana bother getting reshus from Rebbe anyway here to judge in Eretz Yisrael? He would have needed it, of course, to judge in Eretz Yisrael, but we're not assuming that, as Gemara is going to say soon, he was getting it before he went to Bavel. So, first of all, anyway, Rabbeinu Yonah points out that Rabbi Bar Chana specifically doesn't have to judge in Eretz Yisrael. There are many other Chachamim over there. And besides that, since he's only asking before he goes to Bavel, implies he wants it to be able to use it over there. So what good does it do? And the answer is, fine, there would be cities that are on the border between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, the Gemara mentioned such a city elsewhere, called Biram, for example, where the Rishus from Eretz Yisrael would help there. But it's true, once he gets into Bavel, then it's not going to help him. All right, the Gemara says, my Rishus, what was the story where Rabbi Bar Chana asked Rishus to judge? So like this, Ki avanochis Rabbi Bar Chana leBavel, when Rabbi Bar Chana was going to travel to Bavel. Now that whole family actually originally came from Bavel, as the Gemara is going to say in a few lines. So now, Rav Chiya, and apparently many of his siblings, had moved to Eretz Yisrael. But Rabbi Bar Chana, since his family roots were in Bavel, so therefore he's going over there. It could mean he's going there to settle permanently, or it could mean he's just going there for a visit. Anyway, so when he's going down to Bavel, Omale Reb Chiya le Rebbe, so Reb Chiya says to Rebbe, Ben Ochi Yor le Bavel, my nephew, my brother's son, because Chana, as the Gemara is going to say soon, was a brother of Reb Chiya, not Yored le Bavel, is going down to Bavel. Yored, does he have, he asks Rebbe, does he have permission to rule on matters of Isser v'Hetter? To rule on matters of Issa v'Heter. This is where we get the name Yoda Deya for that section of Shulchan Aruch. And Rebbe says Yoda, yes, he can paskin on such cases. Reb Chiya asks Yodin, can he judge Dinim Mominus? And Rebbe answers Yodin, yes, he can judge Dinim Mominus. This is when we have nowadays Yoda Yoda and Yodin Yodin Smicha is based on the phrasing in our Gemara. Yoda in origin, then Yoda Yoda is a question and answer. Yoda Yoda. Yodin, Yodin. We think of them nowadays as just a statement. Yoda, Yoda, Yodin, Yodin, but that's it. Then Reb Chiya asks, Yatir Bechoros, does my nephew, Rabbi Bar Chana, also have authorization from you to be Matir Bechoros, to say a Bechor, an animal, a Bechor, nowadays, after the Korban, we can't bring it as a Korban, so you have to wait till it develops a mum, and then you can shecht it, and then the Kohen shechts it, and he and his family eat the meat. But you need a mumcha, you need an expert to determine whether something is a mum, or it might not be a mum at all, it might be a mum over, it might be a temporary mum, so you need an expert to check for such things. So Rav Chiya is asking on behalf of his nephew, Rabbi Bar Chana, will he have permission where he's going to also be Matir Bechoris? And Rebbe answers, yes, Yatir, yes, I'm giving him authorization to also decide on Bechoros as well. Now, in principle, as we just said, Reb Chiya could have given him the Rishus himself. Again, given that Reb Chiya had Rishus for all these things from Rebbe, he could have just said, you know what, I unilaterally am going to give them to my nephew. However, since Rebbe is around, then he didn't want to do that. He wanted to ask Rebbe whether he's giving him that authority. Okay. Then the Gemara says, on the other hand, ki avanochus Rav leBavel. On the other hand, there was a time when Rav was traveling to Bavel. Now, historically, we know that there was a point when Rav eventually moved permanently from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. And in fact, we find in some places in the Gemara, they considered that like a watershed. It began a new era in the history of the Jews of Bavel, because Rav came there and started spreading Torah to a tremendous degree, much more than before. When we get to Masech Tehillim, Bez Hashem, we'll talk about there were places Rav found over there where there were Amei Oretz, and he brought them back to knowledge of Torah. So in a number of places in Shas, the Gemara always says, Miki also Rav leBavel, from when Rav came to Bavel, begins like a new era in Jewish history. It's even recorded, the year of it is recorded in the Geddes Reb Shura Goyen and other Sfarim from the Rishonim. But so here, we might be talking about when Rav actually left Eretz Yisrael permanently to move to Bavel, but maybe not, because it seems from those sources that was only after Rebbe passed away, and here we're talking about this as while Rebbe was alive. So it would just be, again, like with Rav Bar Chana, he's going on a temporary visit to Bavel to see his family, or whatever it is that he's doing over there. Anyway, So similarly, Omalei Reb Chiya the Rebbe. So Reb Chiya says to Rebbe, Ben Achoisi Yored the Bavel. My nephew, my sister's son, is going down to Bavel. Yoreh, does he have permission from you to rule on cases of Issa v'Heter? And Rebbe answers Yoreh. Yodin, Rebbe says Yodin. Yater b'choros, does Rav have permission to be Mater b'choros to check their mumim? This time, Rebbe said, Al Yater, I'm not granting him that permission to check b'choros. Why not? The Gemara is going to explain soon why that is. But first, we have to ask, Now, why is it that Reb Chiya is calling Rav Bar Chana, my brother's son, and Rav, he's calling my sister's son? You're going to say, okay, well, that's how it is. One of them is a son of Reb Chiya's brother, the other is a son of Reb Chiya's sister. No, because of Ha'amamar, we learn in a Braisa, that Aivu v'chona v'shtila umarta v'Rav Chiya kulu b'nei Rav Acha Rav Abba bar Acha kausel mikafri havu. There were five children who were all the children of Rav Abba bar Acha Karisala from Kafri. As far as Karisala, it might have been like a last name or something. There is actually a Girsa, not Karisala, but Bar Sala, which would mean that his father's name was Sala. Whatever the case, the point is that this Rav Abba had five children whose names are Aivu, Chona, Shila, and Marta. At least some of them are obviously boys, there is an explanation from the Gaonim that Marta over here actually is a woman. Although the Rashbam brings elsewhere that it was actually a man. Whatever the case, the point is, yeah, these five children are all the sons of Rav Abba bar Acha. And one of them is Aivu, who is the father of Rav. Another one is Chona, the father of Rabba. And another one is Reb Chiya. So Rav and Rabba Bar Chana are both Reb Chiya's nephews in the same way. They're both his brother's sons. So why is he calling one of them my brother's son and the other one my sister's son? So the answer is Rav Barachua Dehava Bar Achse, because Rav was not only Reb Chiya's nephew on one side from his brother, he was also his nephew on another side from his sister. Namely, the Gemara explains elsewhere what happened was like this. This Rav Abba bar Acha that we're mentioning over here, the father of this whole family, he and his wife had both been previously married. So what happened was he had previously been married, and so each of them had been previously married. He had the children, the first few children who I mentioned over here, Aivu, Chona, and Shila, and Marta were all born from his first marriage. Meanwhile, his wife from her first marriage had a daughter named Ema. Then afterwards, Rav Acha and this woman got married, and they blended their families together, and then together they had a son, Rav Chiya. So Rav Chiya is a half-brother to Aivu from his father's side and a half-brother to Ema from her mother's side. Meanwhile, Aivu and Ema are not at all biologically related. They're completely allowed to marry one another, and they did, and Rav was their son. So it comes out that Rav was a double nephew of Rav Chiya, from his half-brother and from his half-sister. So Rav is a son of Reb Chiya's brother, but he's also a son of Reb Chiya's sister. So Reb Chiya calls him the son of my sister, as if to say, in other words, not only is he my nephew from one side, but he's a nephew from both sides. Rabba bar Chana bar Achua, the Lab bar Achse, as opposed to Rabba bar Chana, his father was Reb Chiya's brother, his mother was not. So Reb Chiya has to call him my brother's son. Another reason you could say why Reb Chiya used the title my sister's son for Rav is al shem chochmosoi, was in tribute to Rav's chochma. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, emor lachochma achoisi ot. The pasuk says, say to chochma, you are my sister. Meaning, in other words, the chochma should be as close to you as your sister, as a brother and sister are. Elsewhere, the Gemara also explains it means that the same way as everybody knows that your sister is also to you in marriage, the same way that's how clear anything in Torah, anything in chochma of Torah should be to you. The point being, in other words, so when Reb Chiya is calling Rav my sister's son, it's not just because he was in fact the son of Reb Chiya's half sister. It's also in tribute to Rav's chochma. Okay, fine. So that explains the relationships between them. But now let's go back and see. We said when Reb Chiya asked Rebbe to grant permission to Rav Bar Chana for three areas in Halacha, Rebbe granted all three. But when it comes to Rav, he granted only two of them. Well, we have to understand why. Yatter b'choras al yatter. When he asked Rebbe, will Rav have permission during this trip to rule on mumim of a b'chor? And Rebbe says no. So my timer, why not? Are you going to say because Rav is not wise enough in these dinim, he doesn't know all the ins and outs of these dinim? What do you mean? We just said he was such a chacham that was one reason why Rav Chiya used the expression ben achosi on him. So he's definitely a chacham on that area of halacha as well. So why wouldn't Rebbe give him that permission? Are you going to say because he may know the theoretical dinim, but he's not familiar with the practicalities to recognize one mum from another? No. Rav himself says, I spent 18 months living together with a shepherd. Later is a mum kavua, is a mum over. In order to know what is a mum kavua and what is a permanent mum and what is a temporary mum. So he spent 18 months learning this in order to learn it thoroughly. And by the way, the idea is when he says gadalti, I was raised. The Aruch Haner explains he did this when he was young. So therefore, the Gemara can't answer that the story with Reb Chiya and Rav and Rebbe happened before Rav had that expertise, because obviously he did that when he was fairly young, knowing that one day he's going to need this knowledge, and therefore, by the time Reb Chiya asks Rebbe about it, then Rav is definitely familiar with the practicalities of it. So he knows the theoretical halachas, he knows the practicalities, how to recognize a mum. So why didn't Rebbe give him the permission? So the Gemara says, "Ela lach look like covered l'rabba b'chana." The reason was that Reb Chiya wanted the people of Bavel should show greater covered to Rabba Bar Chana. So therefore, there's going to be one thing that Rabba Bar Chana can do and Rav cannot. So the point being, in other words, Rashi explains, Reb Chiya knew that the people of Bavel know how great Rav is and they're going to honor him regardless. But Rabba Bar Chana, apparently they didn't know as well, and therefore he wasn't as great in some ways. Maybe he wasn't as great a Talmid Chacham or something. Whatever the case, they wouldn't know to respect him. So therefore, like this, when we see, oh, there's one thing that he's able to do to be Matir B'choris, which Rav is not, then that will cause them to give Rabba Bar Chana greater respect. The Boisema, another possibility is Fakert, that Rav, the fact that Rav became such an expert in Mumim kind of backfired. Mishum Hogufe, the Rav Bekia B'mumitfe. The very fact that Rav is such a great expert in Mumim, the problem with that is that the Shori Mumi de la Yadi Inchi. The problem is, therefore, he's going to look at an animal, he's going to declare that it's mutter, that it's mutter to shecht and to eat with a mum where other people are not going to recognize, are not going to realize that this is an actual mum kavua. For Amri, later on, people are going to see a similar mum, and they're not going to realize it's not quite the same thing. They're going to say, ki hai gavna, shor Rav. Look, well, we have a precedent. Rav was matter, a mum like this. The Osala Mishri, mum over, and the result is they're going to mistakenly end up declaring that something which is only a temporary mum is actually a permanent one, and they're going to shech the animal and eat it, and that's a problem because then they're eating kodesh and b'chutz. They're eating the b'chor, after all, is meant to be brought as a korban. So then they'd be eating korbanos outside, be shechting and eating korbanos outside the Bais Hamikdash, which is a severe avera. So forget the fact that Rav is so expert in these mumim kind of backfires, and it makes it because of that Rebbe has to be careful of allowing him to be able to rule, to actually practically rule on them. Okay. In any case, the point is we see that Rav Bar Chana and Rav had both gotten reshus from Rebbe, but again, as the Gemara had said before, Rebbe's reshus would not actually extend to that they would actually have that jurisdiction in Bavel. For that, they would need to get permission from the Reish Galusa, but it helps at least for the cities on the border as they pass through those, where they would be able to judge and they would be able to do all these things based on the permission they got from Rebbe. Well, The question is, why indeed do they need that permission? When we said what the Rav Chiya asked about Rav and about Rav Abachona, Yoira, he asked him, can he judge, can he paskin on Hilchus Issa v'Heter? And Rebbe says, Yoira, the question is, why does he need permission? E Gomer, if he, Mela, when it comes to dinim mominus that involves taking away money from one person and giving to another, fine, we're saying you need reshus from the Nasi or the Reish Galusa, as the case may be. But here we're talking about, as far as Issur v'Heter, to paskin whether something is kosher, or where a drop of milk fell into a meat pot, is it mutter or not? Why do you need reshus from a, why do you need reshus from Rebbe to paskin such a thing? E Gomer, if Rav is thoroughly familiar with these halachas, reshus alamli l'mishka, why does he need reshus in order to paskin like that? Because, in other words, Tosfos points out the point of the question is that once he has reshus as far as dine mamonis, then he doesn't need a separate reshus for Issur v'Heter for matters of Yoreh Dea. So, and it would mean once he has that reshus, and as we said on Oman Aleph, that gives him immunity that if he does make a mistake, if it turns out that he made a mistake in halacha, that he wouldn't have to pay. Once he has that for dine mamonis, it automatically covers Issur v'Heter as well. So the answer is Mishram Maisa Shahoya. The answer is because there was an actual case where a mistake was made because somebody taught the halacha wrongly. Not so much he taught it wrongly, but because people misunderstood him. The Tanya, Pama Chasolach Rebbe Lamakam Echad, Rebbe himself one time visited a certain place. Here in the Bavli, it doesn't say where the place was. Rashi brings from the Yerushalmi that it was the city of Akkoi, which, as we're going to talk about soon, the city of Akkoi is actually a border city between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. It was actually in the times of when Yeshua and the Jewish people first conquered Eretz Yisrael. It was squarely within the borders of Eretz Yisrael. Although the pasuk mentions in the end that Shevet Asher, to whom it belonged, did not bother driving out all the goyim from it. But in any case, it was in principle within the borders of Eretz Yisrael. But later on, in the times of the second Beis Hamikdash, it ended up being a border city. Parts of it were settled by Jews, part not, and it became a city on the border, where part of it is located within the borders that were settled, that resettled of Eretz Yisrael, and part not. The point of that we'll see further on in the Gemara. Anyway, so Rebbe came to this place. The Rab Bnei Adam Shemagablam Isisayim Betuma. He saw that people are kneading their dough in a state of tuma. Their kalim are tame. They're not concerned that the food is becoming tame from it. So Omalahem. So Rebbe asked him, "Bnei Ma'at Megablam Isisayim Betuma. Why are you doing that?" Now, fine, this is after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, so there's no kodshim to be eaten. But nevertheless, you still had people who are eating chulin betara. You still had in those times people who are careful to eat even their chulin in a state of tahara. And then the Gaonim also point out that there's another point as well. They're going to be taking challah from this dough, and the challah has to be kept tahar. So how could he be doing that? Omru loy, so the people said, Talmud echad balakan, a Talmud came over here, v'hoir olanu, and he taught us the halacha, mei betsoyim ein machshirin, that water from betsoyim, from swamps, is not machshir. So therefore, we're using that water from swamps to knead our dough, and therefore, as far as we know, it's not makabel tuma. Well, the fact is that that's a terrible mistake, because any kind of water from a pond or from a swamp is just as much machshir l'kabel tuma as water from any other source. What happened was the ihu vahu mei beitzim darash lahu. Now, what happened was the Talmud had taught them that mei beitzim, that egg water, which is to say, in other words, if you take eggs and make your dough with eggs and not water, then it's not machshir l'kabel tuma, which is true. Eggs are not one of the shiva mashkim. So he told them made beitzim. The inu savor made betsoyim kamer. They misunderstood him to be saying not made beitzim but made betsoyim, which means swamp water. So therefore, that was how they came to make this mistake. Couple of interesting things in that. First of all, the Maharshal points out this may be one reason. We know that Masechta Beitza in the Gemara, people often call it Be'a with an ayin instead, and there's a couple of reasons why. One reason may be based on this, because we see that a mistake was made between Beitza and Beitza. So actually the Maharshal says a reason is because Beitzim has a certain improper meaning as well, but there's another different explanation that that the Tiferes Yisrael says that it's actually based on this concern over here that that because people he said beitzim and they misunderstood it as betzoyim, so therefore the minhag developed to use the word beya instead when it comes to contexts of halacha. Anyway, so the point was that they made that mistake. They misunderstood what he said. And furthermore, v'to nami baha. Now, there was an additional mistake that they made as well, which is, in other words, these two mistakes kind of reinforced one another. Tosfos actually gives a different explanation. The fact is, I mean, how do you misunderstand? How do you mishear beitzim as betzoyim? They sound completely different. So Tosfos says because they thought that beitzim, it could be beitzim. There's only a slight difference. Beitzim with a tzere, beitzim with a chirik. And we do find in a Loshon HaPasuk where beitzim means what the Gemara calls here betzoyim, meaning swamps. So they heard him say may beitzim, but they thought that he meant may beitzim, which is only a slight difference. Anyway, v'to nami baha. Furthermore, they made another mistake. They knew a Mishnah, but they misunderstood what the Mishnah is saying. A Mishnah says, "May Karmion u May Piga, the waters of the streams called Karmion and Piga, Psulin, are possible to use for paradromal water to mix the ashes of the paradromal with. Mipneshein may bitsoim or bitsim because they're swamp water and for paradromal you need mayim chayim." Now, v'in hu sover, these people, we're not talking, they weren't Amir Oretz, they were apparently a shtickle to Menachamim, but they misunderstood. They thought, midlagabe chatas psili, since those waters are possible to use to make for mei chatas, for par adrum water, therefore, achshuri nami, like machshuri, so therefore they figured it means they're not machshur the kabal truma as well, v'loihi, but that was a mistake. No, chosim le'inyan chatas, b'inyan mayim chayim. When it comes to mei chatas, when it comes to par adrum water, it has to be mayim chayim, it has to be fresh spring water. So therefore, swamp water is not fresh water because it's stagnant, it stays in one place. So even these streams of Kamian and Piga, there's enough swamp water mixed into them that they're possible. Hocha achshuri called you a machshuri. When it comes to me, machshur the kabel tuma, any kind of water is machshur the kabel tuma. So the point was, so in other words, and the point is, Orochaner points out that what happened was these two mistakes reinforced one another. They wouldn't have thought to misunderstand beitzim as betzoyim or bitzim as Tosfos says, whatever, if it weren't for the fact that they figured, you know what? This does fit with the Mishnah that we learned. It seems to all fit together. Therefore, it must be that he's telling us that the swamp water is not machshul the kabel truma. But in fact, it wasn't so. Tana, so we learn in a brisa, but oisa shah gazru. At that time, they made a gzera talmid al yoda elim ken noto mishus meirabai. A talmid should not pass in halacha unless he gets rishus from his rebbe, because this way the rebbe will make sure that he speaks clearly and not in a way that's going to be misunderstood, as we have over here. In fact, in our times, ever since, you know, we don't have the smicha ishmi piyish already for well over 1,000 years. But eventually, in the times of the Rishonim, there developed a new kind of smicha, which, strictly speaking, is called hatoras hora. Our smicha nowadays, the proper name for it is heter hora or hatoras hora. It means basically that the rav is saying that the Talmud is being given permission to paskin and halacha, which is what we're saying over here, that a person needs rishus from his rebbe. When that was first introduced, it was actually a bit controversial, as new things in Jewish life often are. Historically, one reason why they did it is because, in particular, after the Black Death in the mid-1300s, many kahilas were destroyed, whether by the epidemic itself or whether by pogroms that were taking place at that time. So there were many people setting themselves up as rabbonim who were not really qualified to paskin on halacha. So rabbonim of that time came up with the idea of hatoras hora, that you have to have a person can't become a rav unless he gets this official permission from his rebbe. So it's partially based on this gemara. Again, it was a bit controversial in its time, but eventually it was widely accepted, and that's how it is nowadays. So the Gemara tells another story. Another story also involving a Talmud paskening with or without permission of his Rebbe. So the Gemara says, Tanchum breder of Ami, ikla lechoser. Tanchum, the son of Rab Ami, one time visited a place called Choser. Dorash lahu, and he doushened them. This was apparently before Pesach, so he doushened them. It didn't mutter liltis chitin be Pesach. You're allowed to take wheat that you're going to use for matzah for Pesach, and you're allowed to soak it in water in order to soften it. The Gemara actually discusses in Psachim more details about that. It's not so simple. The idea being, in other words, Rashi explains the principle behind it would be, even though you're putting it in water, wouldn't it become chametz? You're not keeping it in the water that long, and you're crushing it right away. You're grinding it right away. And therefore, it would be mutter. The Gemara discusses in Psachim, it's not so simple. And Lamaisa, the universally accepted halacha is nowadays that we can't. But in any case, this Tanchum paskin to them that they could. Omrulai, so the people told him, Lav Ramani Dimit Tsur Ikahocha, isn't Ramani from Tsur located here in the city? And he's your Rebbe. The Tanya, and we learn in a Braisa, Talmud al Yoda halacha b'makam Rabbi, a Talmud should not paskin halacha in the place of his Rebbe, because it would be chutzpahdik to do that, Elim ken hoya rochik menu shalosh parsois, unless his Rebbe is at least three parsa away, kenegan machni Yisrael, which is the size of the machni Yisrael. Namely, in other words, because where do we learn the din that you can't paskin when your Rebbe is around? We find the Pasuk says, Rashi brings, we find the Pasuk says, when Moshe pitched his tent outside the Machna, so it says, anybody v'hoyakom v'vakish Hashem, anybody who seeks Hashem, anybody who wants to learn Torah, or get a psak halacha, would go to Moshe. Now, since the Machna was 3x3 parasa, it means that people from one end of it would have to go 3 parasa to get to Moshe's tent. So we see there, and they wouldn't just ask their local Talmid Chachamim. Of course, in their Shevet, they had local Talmid Chachamim who they could ask, but nevertheless, they went to Moshe. Why? Because their local Talmid Chachamim are not allowed to paskin within 3 parasa of Moshe. So how could you be paskining over here? Omalahusei says, Lava Datori, I didn't realize that Ramani is located here in town. If I'd known that, then yeah, I wouldn't have said it. Now, Tosfos points out then that, wait a minute, we have other Gemaras that say, it's not just a matter of being in the presence of his Rebbe or in the same city as his Rebbe. It seems there are other considerations as well, as long as his Rebbe is alive, for example. And here we were just saying in the Gemara about the point of getting Rishus. So Tosfos points out that there are different details over here. Here we're talking about a Talmud Chover. So if he's outside 3 parasa, then it would be fine. As we have an example involving Rav Chista and Rav Huna, who Rav Chista was a Talmud Chover of Rav Huna. But here we're talking about when you're talking about a full Talmud, then he would need more than that. Then even outside 3 parasa. Then he wouldn't be able to, but Tosfos also says, again, there is this matter of getting Rishus as well. So there are different dinim about it. And Shulchan Aruch, when is a Talmud entitled to Paskin Halacha, when his Rebbe is alive and when not? So you have this consideration of whether he has Rishus. One consideration is indeed whether he has Rishus from his Rebbe, but another consideration is if his Rebbe is in town, even if he has Rishus, he shouldn't necessarily be Paskining Halacha, because after all, your Rebbe is in town. What are you going Paskining by yourself when your Rebbe is available, and you should instead be consulting with him before you paskin. So there are those different. So there are those different rules and considerations in that regard. So in Shulchan Aruch, it summarizes as follows: you're never allowed to paskin halacha in front of your Rebbe. A person is paskin halacha in front of his Rebbe is chayav misa, even if he has netilas reshus. Based on this Tosfos over here, it still wouldn't work if it's within 3 parasa. If his Rebbe is his Rabbi Muvhak, if it's his primary Rebbe from whom he learned most of his Torah, if he's 12 mil away and somebody asks him, which is 3 parasa, and somebody asks him incidentally a Dvar Halacha, then he could answer. But to set himself up as a Rav, that he would not be allowed unless either his Rebbe is no longer alive or his Rebbe gives him Rishus. And then again, based on Tosfos over here, you have this distinction between a regular Talmud and a Talmud Chaver. And then the Mechaber and the Ramah go on to talk about various other distinctions within this. So the point is that, so we see that this Tanchum, in other words, if he had known that Ramani is in town, he wouldn't have paskin. Once he did, then he abstains as he should. Well, the Gemara tells another story. Rabbi Chia saw a person standing in a Beis HaKvaris. Omalei. So he asks him, Lav ben ish pliny koyen ata, aren't you a son of Pliny whom I know to be a koyen? You're his son, you're also a koyen. What are you doing in a Beis HaKvaris? Amalei Ein, so the man's answer is yes, that was my father. Unfortunately, Avorda Hu Gavra Gvai Naim Hava. That person's father, meaning my father, he had high eyes. He followed his eyes, he followed his inclinations rather than paying attention to halacha. The Nosan Ein Begrusha, he ended up putting his eyes, he ended up putting his attention on a grusha and married her, v'chiloloi, and the result is he made me a cholol. So I'm a cholol, so therefore I'm allowed to be in a basic varis. Now, what is the relevance of this story over here? So Rashi says, it comes to tell us, Rav Chiya was saying all along as a Talmud of Rebbe, and this was apparently where Rebbe lived. Nevertheless, when it comes to telling this person you're doing something which is also, or something which Rav Chiya thought, which was also because he thought he's a Kohen, then that you can do even if your Rebbe is in town. And that, in fact, is the halacha, that all of this that we're talking about, when we talk about this inyan of the three parasa and Natilas Rishus and all of that, if it's a matter of la frusha me'isura, to prevent somebody from doing an isur, then you're allowed to even in the presence of your Rebbe. But even then, you don't say it as a statement of halacha, you say it as to make the person realize. In this case, Rav Chiya doesn't tell him, you're a Kohen, you're also to be in a basic varus. He just says, aren't you a Kohen? And the person is expected to realize on his own that he shouldn't belong there. Except the answer is that I am able to, because I'm a cholo. Tosfos gives it, then actually Rashi gives a different girsa over here. The girsa over here in the Gemara would not be Rav Chiya Chazye, rather we take out the word Chiya, and the word would be Rebbe Chazye Lahu Gavra. Rebbe saw a certain person. So therefore, in other words, the point is, it would be a continuation of the previous story. While Rebbe was in Akkoi, he saw those people who were using the swamp water to make their dough, and he called them out on it, and they told him that there had been a misunderstanding. And then, in addition, in Akkoi, where Akkoi is on the border of Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz, and Midrabanan, Chutz La'aretz is Tomei, so now he saw this person standing, not literally in a Beis HaKvaris, but he saw him standing on the Goyish side of Akkoi, the part which is Tomei Drabanan. And he asks him why you're doing that. It's Eretz Amim, and it has the din of a Beis HaKvaris, and aren't you a son of a Kohen, and you should try to avoid such areas. And the man answers that I'm a cholo. So Tosfos also agrees with that Girsa as well. So the point is, in other words, the reason why the Gemara would be bringing this story back to back with the other one is just because they both happened while Rebbe was an Akkoi. By the way, Tosfos mentions in this connection that in the story over there before with the eggs and the swamp and all that, that what it was, Tosfos brings a girsa that it was that they thought meishtelak beitzim ka'amar, that the Talmud, when he was telling them that if you make dough with egg water, meaning so he meant egg whites or whatever, then it's not mukshel kabel tuma. They thought he meant meishtelak beitzim, which Marashah explains Tosfos may mean. In other words, he told that they thought it means water that eggs were cooked in. So which obviously is machshel kabel truma. So therefore, so that's what we're saying before, that you need permission from the nasi or from your rebbe or whatever to judge even dini iser v'heter, because like this, if he had done that, he would have found out that this Talmud is using the word mei beitzim or mei bitzim or whatever, and people are misunderstanding it, and he would tell them be clearer and don't allow them to think that it means swamp water or water that eggs were cooked in or whatever. Okay. So the Gemara finishes off this discussion about Rishus to judge. Pshkit l'palga, it's obvious that if a person is going to get permission from his Rebbe for only some things, then that works. Obviously, Hakama de Mahani, we said in the stories before that works, as we had, for example, with Rav, where he got permission from Rebbe to judge, to decide cases of Issur v'Heter and cases of Dine Mominus, but not cases of Mumei Bechor. So it's clear that works. What about, though, the question would be, Al-Tnai Mai. What about, can he give permission, Al-Tnai, that the permission will be only for a certain amount of time, let's say? And the answer is Toshma, we can prove. Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Shomen, we find that Rabbi Yochanan says his Talmud Rav Shomen, who's traveling to Bavel, Harei Ata Birshusenu Achatove Etzlenu. You are hereby given all Rishus until you come back to us. So we see that Rav Shomen could be getting a permission that's effective for a while. So we see that such a thing works. And again, the point is, Rabbi Yochanan is not the Nasi, but nevertheless, he has such Rishus, and therefore he's able to give it over to Rav Shomen, like Tosfos had said, on Amar Aleph, and therefore so he has the ability to do that, but he's able to do that for a period of time until you get back here. So we see that, yes, such a thing works as well.